Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Welcome again to Whiskey Congress. We've got a remote show going. We got some feedback from some folks wondering why we weren't on our normal schedule, which I frankly found flattering, but Steve and I had ridiculous travel weekends and a lot going on. Steve, you want to talk about your weekend?
Yeah, man. You all settled in out there in your...
In Rocky Mount, North Carolina? Yes, I am.
Yeah. I will not be coming to visit you out there, by the way.
You want an idea about this town?
Yeah.
So I went to the grocery store today. I went to the Harris Teeter. And you know how you get those coupons on the back of your receipt? I've got six coupons, but I really got two because it was just two on each. So it's two coupons repeated three times on the back of my receipt. One is for tire alignment, and the other is for a jiu-jitsu studio.
Oh, well, see, there you go. You like jiu-jitsu.
I like jiu-jitsu, and yeah. my car is a little off balance, so maybe I should do this.
Yeah.
It could be a perfect time for me.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, starting in with the weekend, first of all, I am drinking a Lafroy 10, the 10-year. You know, nothing special. You know, before the show, you and I were talking about the logistics of doing the whiskey review with you being back on the road. So we'll get that straightened out. But for right now, I'm just drinking the Lafroy by myself. We're both a fan of it. Right. I won't score it right now. We'll wait until we get, you know, we both get on the same
simultaneous
page.
Okay.
With what we're drinking. But, you know, I mean, Lafroy has just got that classic, almost medicinal type taste. You know, and I guess I've adjusted to it over time. So it's not quite as, I guess, initially repugnant, but it's still very strong, opens up the nostrils, and just kind of one of my favorite whiskeys. It's one of my favorite whiskeys to taunt people with. You know, when you have a person who's not a whiskey drinker and, you know, they're like, hey, what are you drinking? And you're like, here, take a whiff. You
right.
know, you don't warn them or anything like that, and it just punches them right in the face. I love it.
I'm with you. And then if they can't get by the smoke and the peat, they just, I have one friend who claims it smells like a Band-Aid, and I'm like, yes, it does. Isn't it wonderful?
And you know, it absolutely does. And it's amazing how over time, drinking these smoky, peaty whiskeys, you not only adapt to those flavors, but you begin to enjoy them and crave them.
I love them.
Yeah.
Well you win this one because I'm drinking Black Box Shiraz. So,
okay.
Yes, I'm drinking box wine.
That's that.
Hotel living, maybe.
But my weekend, there was the Arnold Sports Festival down in Columbus this weekend. It's a huge event. Thousands of people go all kind of converge on the city of Columbus at the convention center and other places throughout the city. It's all health and fitness oriented. You know, Arnold Schwarzenegger himself is there. I didn't run into him this time around. It seemed like he had just been to where I was going, or he was about to be where I was leaving. And I just had a
he
lot
was ducking
going on
you.
This weekend.
I'm calling this, he was ducking you.
What's that?
He was ducking you.
Maybe he was. Maybe he was. I mean, we have run into each other in the past, and he's, you know, he was just telling me to get out of the way. But, you know, I thought it was a very memorable, hey, get out of the way. So, yeah, it was a huge weekend. I competed on Friday, I didn't do as, you know, it didn't go as planned. It wasn't a bad meet for me. You know, my initial reaction was pretty frustrated, but I think I played it pretty level-headed. You know, looking back, I haven't even looked at the final results. I think I ended up taking second or third. But the meet ran so late. You know, I got there at 1 o'clock in the afternoon on Friday. I didn't leave until after 11 o'clock that night. So I left before they even handed out the award. So I don't even know if I didn't even stay to find out where I finished. I just knew I didn't win. So it was just like, all right, punt on this. You know, I needed a shower and I thought I was going to bed, but I ended up drinking a bottle of Macallan with my buddy down there. So there's that. And then the festival, I went to the festival on Saturday, just did some recon work for some ideas that I have and that I'm working on, kind of on the side a little bit, and got to see some really cool stuff. So I took a lot of video. I'm going to try my hand at editing it down, putting it to some music. And you know, it may not be the greatest production of all time, but, I will put it all together and put it, out on our YouTube channel, and on our Facebook channel for people to check out. So, you know, keep an eye out for that.
You know, I was worried about you a little bit, actually. I texted you at around 4 thinking you'd have been done at about 3. And I don't think you had either just started. I think you had just started when I texted you. And
yeah, I think when, if I remember correctly,
you had done one lift.
Texted me, and I think I had either just squatted or I was about to go squat, which, you know, a powerlifting meet goes squat, bench, deadlift. You know, 3 attempts at the squat, 3 attempts at the bench, 3 attempts at the deadlift. But you have flights. This meet had, you know, 3 flights. So everybody squatted in flight A, and then flight B, and then flight C. And then it cycled around to the bench. Everybody in flight A, B, and C all benched, and then deadlift all 3 flights, A, B, and C, participated in the deadlift. And then, you know, they have to tally all the weights and all that other stuff.
And
you know, the meet started off sketchy for me. I got my arm got caught in the safety straps on the way down. So I'm sitting there with, you know, 600 plus pounds on my back at a weird angle. And I had to ask them to take it off because I on my left side, I just couldn't go down because of the way I was kind of tangled in the straps, and it was kind of like a marionette there. So I asked them to take the weight, and that blew my first attempt. So now I have to, you know, if you don't get it, if you miss all your attempts in the squat, then that boots you out of the meet. You know, you can't get a total, so therefore you can't win. So I had to kind of readjust my game plan, and, you know, I overcame it and got through the meet and finished it, but it definitely did not go the way I wanted it to go.
You know, a bad meet for you is still a freakish performance. I mean, you sent me the numbers. If you want to put them out there, that's cool. I know they didn't meet what you hoped for, but still, compared to even amongst elite powerlifters, you still did damn well. You won this last year, and I know you're frustrated, and I feel for you, but you've got nothing to be, you know, I mean, I feel your frustration, I feel your disappointment, but you still did ridiculous numbers.
Well, I appreciate it. I do. And that's one of the things I did eventually come to grips with, that, you know, and it took one of the other guys who lifted at the meet, you know, to tell me, like, listen, I mean, you still put up numbers that a lot of guys would love to be able to put up. You know, it's just like some of the, you know, like the number I opened with on the deadlift, you know, most guys in the meet didn't even hit on their second and third attempts. So I can't get too upset about it. There were some variables in there this year that I wouldn't accept as excuses. But, I mean, the reality is,
you were shaking off injuries, I'll say it for you.
Yeah, well, you know, some of those things have changed. The variables have been adjusted. You know, I spent a lot of time on Sunday, you know, reworking my game plan from a training perspective on how to be better. So I'm going to spend the next, you know, 16 weeks just trying to rebuild my body, you know, cut down a little fat, and, you know, just come back stronger. So
I have to tell you, when I called you at like 11 a.m. Sunday, you were still in Columbus, and you sounded like you had a truck sitting on your chest while we were speaking.
Yeah, I was
a combination of whiskey and
here's the deal. The thing is with Columbus, like, I treat the Arnold Expo like I am, like I'm at a conference for work. You know, I try to approach it, you know, if I'm competing, obviously I approach that like a work trip. But I use the actual expo. I use it as opportunity to network and to meet people, you know, because there's certain things that I would like to do in the fitness industry. So there's, you know, it's good to know these people. And then on, you know, on top of that, it's exhausting. You know, the Columbus Expo Center is massive, you know, I mean, and, you know, you do a couple laps around that thing. If you've walked, you know, you've walked a couple miles. So not to mention, you know, parking your car, having to walk and everything else. So
You nearly got blown off the road on your way down there.
What's that?
Not to mention, you nearly got blown off the road by the winds on your way down there.
Oh my God, that was nuts. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, it was a crazy weekend. It was productive, had a lot of fun, you know, Friday and Saturday night. You know, my buddy and I got a little bit too aggressive, I think, with, indulging in the spirits, and so needless to say there was a price to be paid the next day each time around, but all in all it was a good time. So you know, and you know what's interesting, this year at the expo there was a lot of technology. You know, I was curious to see kind of what the new trend would be, and it was very technology driven. I thought I was going to see more like cannabis related stuff as you know, there's so many different cannabis laws that have shifted in different states. There wasn't as much. I only saw two cannabis vendors. One was for like cannabis infused spices that you like cook with.
All right.
And then the other was like this topical cream that you put on your back, kind of like a Bengay or an Icy Hot.
Like a CBD oil, that, like anti-inflammatory?
Yeah, it had activated hemp in it for anti-inflammatory. Actually, I got some samples. So if you want to try one of the creams, I will make sure I get it to you when you get back in town. Because I had the guy actually, because I was there on Saturday after I competed, and my back was tight from the meet. And I said, well, just throw some on my back. You know, I've been walking around. And he's like, oh, sure. So, you know, he wiped me down because I was a sweaty beast. And then, you know, he rubbed it on my lower back. And then I actually dropped my pants in the middle of the fucking expo. so he could get it on my knee, because I couldn't get my pants leg above my calf. So I just dropped my pants right there in the middle of the expo. And,
I know why Arnold didn't want to talk to you now.
Can you put some of that on my knee? He's like, yeah, sure. He was kind of hyperactive fitness guy, so you know, he didn't really give a shit. you know, it was a good time though.
Okay, that's going to be a tough one to top. all right, so, yeah, my weekend was not quite that interesting. I didn't drop my pants in front of Arnold Schwarzenegger. I did drive to Charleston, West Virginia, hang out with a college buddy I hadn't seen probably in 10, 12 years. Had a great time doing that. Saw Charleston, West Virginia for the first time in a positive light. Actually, we had a great time. It was a lot of cool restaurants and bars in downtown Charleston, and went to a place called Pies and Pints and had like a funky pizza and some craft beer, and you know, he drove me around in his Tesla. It's the first time I've ever been in a Tesla, and holy shit, they're amazing.
Which Tesla was it?
I want to say it was the S. I you know what, I should have texted him. So we were driving around.
What did it look like?
It looked like a fancy sedan, really fancy large sedan.
Oh yeah, that's a yes.
And it was
that's a badass car.
Oh my gosh, Steve. So we get in this thing, we're on these windy ass roads in his neighborhood in Charleston, and he's talking about it, and he says, and if you really punch it, and he nails it, and he literally pinned me to the seat.
Wow.
And then he told me that's not the sporty one. He had taken it to Columbus for some reason, and they let him like use the sportier one while his was in the shop. And he said, you could tell the difference. And literally I felt like I was about to, it literally pinned me to the seat
Jim, what are you saying? Are you saying we should trade the trucks in and just go Tesla?
Go Tesla. I'm really not saying that, but I was absolutely blown away with both the technology of this thing and the power. I mean, it's low end acceleration is just amazing.
So, it's got crazy technology inside of it too.
And like there's that.
I know the screen in there is massive.
The screen in there is bigger than the TV I grew up watching. Not quite, but close. And he put it in self-driving mode at one point. He offered me a chance to drive it, but I had had like two more beers than him at that point. And I said, I'm not driving a Tesla in a town I don't know on windy roads after having a couple extra beers. So I did not drive it, but thing was fucking amazing.
Jim with the responsible play of the year, although I would have woke up the next morning and been like, give me the key fob.
Give me the key. You know, if I wasn't eager to get out here and get settled and whatever, I probably would have done that. But it, I mean, holy shit, that car is amazing. So Elon Musk, I'm impressed.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I became a pretty big Elon Musk fan after I watched the thruster boosters land themselves after he sent a rocket to the, you know, in the outer space, you know, last month. That to me was just amazing. And, you know, and I know his story and I know all about it and all the companies he started and he's the greatest entrepreneur ever and everything else. But I think, you know, with everything else, as cool as they were, like none of that, like, it's funny. I just used PayPal today and, you know, that was a company that he was, I think, the CEO of. I just used it today and, you know, you don't even realize how crazy it is when you really think about it, you know, that you're able to just from your phone instantly send money to someone else, you know, and it pops up in their account. And then, it's crazy how it works. Now, you know, people have a lot of complaints about PayPal and, you know, it was fine, fair, but it's still a pretty amazing, you know, app and, you know, advancement in technology. But all that being said, it's so commonplace now that you don't really process it.
Right.
But when I watch those boosters, I mean, for the last 30 years, every time you watch a rocket take off, those boosters fall off. And then you're like, well, I feel like that's a giant waste, right? I've always felt like that was a giant waste. I'm like, it's so stupid. Like they fall off when they get to a certain point in the atmosphere. And then they, what do they just burn up? Do they land? Does that shit hit somebody?
I think they fall into the ocean.
Yeah, I mean, like, so either way, so they're just clustering up in the, I mean, it's so stupid. I'm not an engineer. You are, but you're not.
I'm not an aeronautical engineer, correct?
Right. So, I mean, obviously, that's not something that's easy to figure out, but they did. And it was just so cool to watch those things come back down to Earth and land, like, in unison. And there was another one. There was a third one that one actually did crash into the ocean, but still, it was pretty crazy to watch. So that's when my, you know, kind of, I kind of just started to grow this weird boy crush on Elon Musk.
My boy crush on Elon Musk goes when I learned about the Hyperloop, basically a pneumatic tube that can shoot you from L.A. to San Francisco in 30 minutes for the cost of $25. Like that is the, because he thought building a train was stupid. And I was like, holy shit, this guy is just, and he didn't even want to profit off that. He's like, I'm too busy. Here's a plan. Do it. And there's actually talk about building a Hyperloop that connects Chicago to Cleveland to Pittsburgh. Imagine what would happen if you get from Pittsburgh or Cleveland to Chicago in 30 minutes for $25.
Oh, I could tell you exactly what would happen.
Properties
would die of alcohol poisoning.
Like
Pittsburgh, Cleveland, and Chicago, three of the drunkest major cities in America. Child, please.
All right. All right. So we need to talk about a couple things. We first need to talk some Whiskey Congress business because the Deadpool has been stagnant. I've had John Kelly. You've had Rex Tillerson, right?
Yes. Yes.
And Tillerson looked like he was about to be the next one, which would put you up. I think you're currently up 3-1 in Deadpool betting.
So Tillerson was on the ropes, and you know I had some information that I thought was good on his whole financial situation, but it turns out it was not accurate, or it didn't matter, or he was punted on a crazy amount of money and whatever. So. You know, Rex Tillerson is still in. I was wrong. I eat that and own it. Well,
John Kelly's still around too. Now he's been pushed to the edge.
John Kelly was pushed to the edge. It definitely looked. I mean, when that whole thing with the aide who was the staffer who was beating his wife, when that went down, I thought you were actually gonna, you know, kind of jump back in the game. But somehow Kelly survived it. And you know, if someone in the Trump, if they don't get fired, like within 3 to 4 days of the rumors of them being fired, then they survive. But the reason why they survive is because something else happens where literally everyone, including everyone in the White House, just forgets about it.
Certainly feels that way. So we have to make a team decision here. Does the Hope Hicks departure reset the Deadpool?
I have to say yes. Now, a lot of people don't know who Hope Hicks is. So we probably want to explain that, but you explain it, but I will, okay. What I will say is yes, her departure resets the Deadpool.
Okay. So Hope Hicks was the White House communications director, which is ironic because you barely ever heard her talk. She was rough. I think she's 28 years old. Is it 28? You know, very attractive.
She's younger
woman.
Than me, and she's under 30. So yes.
And she was the communications director, but really flew under the radar, and Trump fawned over her because, you know, he bragged that he asked her, how much political experience do you have? And when she said none, he said, you're hired. And so I would love to push back on this because I think there's a way greater chance of John Kelly falling off that sooner than Rex Tillerson, but Sean Spicer reset the Deadpool. She's every bit as big a deal as Sean Spicer. So Deadpool reset. I wish we had a coin to flip to see who gets to go first.
I'll let you go first.
I get to go first. All right. I'm torn between two. I know who I want it to be. I'm going to go back to one of my previous selections. I'm going to go to Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III. Just because of the recent goings on between Sessions and Trump. I might lose, but if I win, it will be one of the happier moments of my political life. So I'm going with Jeff Sessions.
All right. Well, okay. So explain to me why that's your pick.
It's my pick because he is being directly, aggressively insulted by Trump. He was called Mr. Magoo, which is kind of funny but embarrassing that the president is doing that. Sessions is in. If Trump could push him out, he would. If you could fire him without repercussion, I believe he would. I think Sessions will cling on for dear life, possibly out of spite. But I also think there's a chance that something will push him to the point where he just says, enough, you deal with it. Now, I tweeted the other day that if Trump really wants to make a splash, he should do an executive order to legalize cannabis, which will cause Jeff Sessions' head to explode and probably get him to quit. So maybe I'm trying for a two birds with one stone thing here. But
you know what's funny? So yes, to cut you off. But
cut me off.
So Jeff Sessions gave an interview this week where he said he was utterly surprised by people's reaction to his opposition to marijuana. Like, he just couldn't believe the backlash he's received publicly from the public and even elected officials who support this madness of marijuana, also known as reefer madness. It's just amazing how out of touch he is. But this is why I think that I'm safe with you not catching me, because there's a reason why Jeff Sessions is still there. And my belief is that he's still there because he wants to be there, because no matter what Trump says or does, he's not overly impacted by it, right? He Jeff Sessions has his own agenda, and Trump's agenda basically aligns with it, right? Trump's agenda is mostly appeasing to the, you know, conservative, you know, kind of middle American, you know, white male. But plenty of women voted for him, but it's the mostly the conservative. Women. I would even say evangelical. I just think that there's a base there. We know what the profile is, right? There's some outliers. There's plenty of outliers. There's plenty of people who could come in and say there's, you know, 1% of black people, and there's, you know, 5% of Latinos, and this percent and that percent of this group and that group. Okay, fine, whatever. But Jeff Sessions has an agenda that he wants to drive home, that he wants to push through. And Jeff Sessions knows there's no other, he's already been in the Senate. He knows he can never run for president. He would never win. And so he knows his best chance to implement the policies that he wants to see is in the seat that he's in right now. So you will have to drag him out kicking and screaming, and he will not let go of the Attorney General gavel unless you have to fucking pry it from his cold, dead hand. He's not going anywhere on his own accord. And I think Trump has no problem talking a big game, but I don't think he'll fire Jeff Sessions.
I don't think he'll fire him either, but I do think there will be some. If there are skeletons in Jeff Sessions' closet, there will be the threat those skeletons will be thrown into the public eye.
I think we would have found them already, but fine, if we haven't and they come up, then, you know, you win, to the victor go the spoils. But what I will say, though, is I don't think we'll find them. But if we do, chances are whatever the skeletons are going to be, it's going to have something to do with race and racism and everything else. And that is not going to be enough for Trump to get rid of.
He's proven he doesn't mind that.
Right. I mean, because he just like that, he doesn't care about. And this White House, the one thing that he and John Kelly know, whether John Kelly really truly agrees with the Trump agenda or not, what, you know, John Kelly is smart enough to figure out that, okay, when something happens, we have a catastrophe, we have to manage it in the moment better, but we only have to do that for so long. We don't have to make any aggressive, rash, or bold decisions because we know it'll blow over. We know that something else is coming, whether we generate it or the media generates it or something actually generally happens.
Or word, right? Comes out that Trump fucked a different porn star.
Okay.
Well, I'm not, that. Well, you know what? Actually, I don't care about that. That to me is, it's funny too. I was listening to, I think, CNN on Sirius Satellite, and they were saying, this should be a bigger story. I'm like, no, it shouldn't. Dude.
But
who cares?
So we're on the same page there. It should be a bigger story, but why? Right? I mean, because mind you, I was, when, you know, Clinton was going through his whole thing with Monica Lewinsky, I was 16, 17, 18 years old. That went on for, you know, 2-3 years. And even then, I'm thinking, why do we care? Right? Like, I mean, they built it around the fact that he lied when he was on the stand, so they wanted to impeach him over it. But really, they were building it around the fact that he, oh my God, he took advantage. He blah, blah, blah. And, you know, Monica Lewinsky's like, did he really? I mean, I just kind of like sucking dicks. And he was a guy of power, so I did it.
Well,
who the fuck cares?
And in the case of Clinton, it was way bigger of a scandal because he at least put on the show of being a, you know, a traditional family man, whatever. I mean, Trump's on his third marriage. You know who is really glad that Trump fucked Stormy Daniels? Is Melania. She's like, better her than me.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's the one, you know, and what's really crazy is, you know, the conservative feminist, right? The ones who are, you know, they're very pro women, but they're conservative. They're like, you know, we support Trump, like a Kellyanne Conway, right? Where's Kellyanne Conway on this whole thing? Now, listen, again, I don't care. I really don't care that he had sex with Stormy Daniels. I think it's a non-story. I think it's the only reason they're trying to make it a story is because of the evangelical base and that whole play. But in reality, you know, it's a non-story. You know, now there are some questions popping up with that whole thing with Stormy Daniels, because remember, his lawyer paid her off. And I saw today a quick, quick headline that the lawyer is pissed off that he wasn't reimbursed. And so he let that slip to the wrong person. And that could kind of be something, right? Because if somehow a connection can be made that the Trump campaign paid her off and didn't report the payoff as something political or something along those lines, then you could theoretically have some form of fraud.
True.
But I mean, that's, I don't know. I think that's more work than it's worth. And I'm not sure what it gets you in the end.
And I think we're agreeing here, because I mean, I don't care.
Cause it's not enough to take him out of the White House. You just waste a bunch of money and time and energy on, you know, a non-story.
Agreed. All right, so I'm afraid you're about to use my former pick against me in the Deadpool. Am I right?
Oh, Jim. Wait. So,
I went Jeff Sessions.
You went Jeff Sessions. I honestly think, I think that the whole, see, here's the weird thing. I think people being flipped out of the White House now, it's such a bizarre situation. I'm actually honestly sticking with Rex Tillerson.
Really?
Yeah, I'm going to stick with him. And in my heart of hearts, I know this is a bad choice, because I've actually come to really like Rex Tillerson as the... in the role that he's in. I like him. I like what he's doing. He's kind of like, he reminds you, like, it's like someone took John Wayne and said, all right, can you do some international, you know, kind of peacekeeping, and can you be the babysitter for this, you know, loose cannon we have in the White House? And he kind of annoyingly agrees to it. And then they say, all right, but we built you an out. And he said, well, you know, I'm a cowboy, so there is no easy way out. I'll see it through to the end. That's kind of how I view Rex Tillerson. And I don't think that's wrong. But what my fear is, and where I think I could be right on this whole Deadpool thing, is... if Trump continues to kind of fuck around with Russia and China, the tariffs, and all these things, and Rex Tillerson has to constantly go back and say, we're not going to slap you with tariffs, or, you know, he's got to handle shit with Russia. Like, I don't know if we're being tough on Russia or if we're trying to work with Russia. I don't know what we're doing. If this kind of nonsense with Trump continues, and he really pushes the issue on tariffs and NAFTA and everything else, then I could see Rex saying, you know what? Not what I signed up for. I tried. I did everything I could.
That's an interesting point. And, yeah.
And he punts.
That's a very interesting point. And I'm surprised you're going there.
I don't think anymore now we have, you know, obvious choices. I think, you know, early on, you know, you saw a lot of misfits that were going to get chewed up and spit out, you know, like Ranks Grievous and
Bannon,
you know, Scaramucci and
Spicer.
Bannon, we didn't see initially, but I mean, it became, you know, pretty clear pretty quick. And so, you know, because, you know, there's a lot of people that are getting booted, but they're lower level people who, you know, like I would have to seriously pull out the roster of who's even there and look and see like where's like, and Hope Hicks came out of nowhere. Right. I mean, like she came out of nowhere and, you know, she kind of jumped ship because of this whole, you know, Russia scandal, subpoena investigation.
Right.
You know, she didn't want to say anything and she didn't know anything and just kind of like, oh, maybe this is, you know, too much. And she kind of jumped out. So I think there's.
Maybe when you come from her background and you think, holy shit, I could get indicted in a federal court.
I don't think there's a clear favorite, but I think going with Rex Tillerson, for every reason I think he'll stay, I think there's a distinct possibility that some of that mentality and thought process could be the reason he goes if Trump continues kind of down this path that he started in the last, you know, 7 to 10 days.
So here's why this whole reset of the Deadpool could become irrelevant, because Jared Kushner could reset it real soon. He is teetering.
Well, yeah, that's, and you know, he was such a low hang, you know, him and Ivanka were both kind of low hanging fruit. Also, I don't even know what their roles are. So it's hard to kind of put them in there. You know, I mean, everyone else has had a defined, distinct role, and Ivanka and Jared Kushner are both kind of, you know, staffers, aides, something.
Advisors, and, whatever the fuck they're called.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they have some role, but the question is, what is it? And, you know, Jared's troubles as of late have definitely, I think, would lead anyone to say, I don't know how much longer he can withstand the barrage. You know, I mean, I think he came in thinking that, you know, his business acumen, and I think he and Trump both thought his business acumen and his business mind would be enough to overcome the hurdles of not having experience in politics. And I think it was the exact opposite. I think his lack of experience in politics exposed them a great deal, to the point where I think you're right. He may end up being the sacrificial lamb sooner than later.
I think in his case, it's a matter of believing his own bullshit, right? I think he thought he was smarter than the system, and the system chews up and spits out people who really don't know how to work it. And that doesn't necessarily make it the system a good thing, but it is what it is, and you got to get through that. And if you don't have the understanding and the acumen and the experience, you're done. I mean, we'll see. I'm not a Jared hater. I'm certainly not a fan, but he's facing, you know, allegations that he received $500 million in loans while the campaign was going on to help bail him out of failed real estate decisions. His father-in-law, at one point in his life, had overextended in his real estate ambitions and gone from, you know, alleged billionaire to allegedly borderline broke. I'll be curious to see how this all plays out. So Jared could reset things for us. The Deadpool has been reset. I've switched to Jeff Sessions. You're doubling down on Rex Tillerson. We'll see how that goes. You want to lighten it up a bit?
Yeah, I think that's a good call.
All right. So we've had a couple things going on. How much of the Oscars did you watch, if any?
I watched as much as I could. Sorry about that, guys, with the noise. So I watched it, but I was so tired. I was kind of in and out. you know, like I at some point in time.
That's right. It was last night, wasn't it?
I woke up and things were happening, and then, you know, sometimes my TV was watching me, but I did have it on, and I saw, so I did see some of the key moments. Like I was able to see when Kobe Bryant won for the best animated short, which that to me is very interesting. And the reason why is some of the political air around the Oscars this year. You know, Kobe, you know, had that rape allegation in Colorado. And, you know, that was years ago. I mean, that was, oh, God. I mean, what?
Late 90s?
That was
mid-90s?
It was like the early 2000s, maybe 2002 or 3. So.
All right, I'll buy that.
So that
maybe that makes more sense. Probably late 90s is probably too early. But yeah, I was a long time ago.
I was in college. I actually remember where I was at. I was in Saratoga, New York when the allegations came down. But that's a whole nother story. And it was a long time ago, right? Like, so we're talking 15 or so years ago, and you know, the story wasn't that he, you know, was the scary man in the corner and grabbed a girl, or he didn't drug her. It was, you know, they had some form of a relationship, and then he took that relationship too far, which kind of goes to your point that we need to kind of distinguish some of these events, and we need to take them individually and look at them. Like, you know, it's not all the same.
Like Louis C.K. and Harvey Weinstein are not the same,
right?
Kind of monster.
I mean, it still wasn't a good situation.
Agreed.
You know, and we don't, you know, we don't have all the facts, but we have, you know, I think we can piece together enough to say, you know, you had a situation there that it was questionable, and you know, if he did something she didn't want to do, then, you know, he was in the wrong, period. You know, it never ended up going to trial. I think around, there were motions that had happened, and eventually the girl ended up saying she wasn't going to testify, and the charges were dropped.
Right.
And now we have the Me Too movement, and everything that's happened in Hollywood, it was interesting to kind of see the reaction. I thought live the reaction, if you're just watching the Oscars and you take away the politics of it, Kobe's reaction was great, right? Like you have a guy who's won, four or five championships. He's known as just being a hard ass on the court, you know, whether it's practice or a game. You know, he had that drive to, you know, passion to win and to be as good, if not better, than Michael Jordan. And then you see a guy who, in a completely different arena, wins an Oscar. And it's just like, you're world-renowned, you're massively rich, you've won, you've achieved at the highest levels in your arena. And then he wins this Oscar, and he's basically like a kid in a candy store, or a kid, you know, on... you know, who just got his first car or whatever analogy you want to make. And there was something, it was nice to see, you know, his joy, but then it's overshadowed, you know, to me by the fact that, you know, there's that girl in Colorado who made that accusation against him, who, if she did enjoy watching the Oscars, that may have just ruined it for her. And it's just, it's a hard dynamic to deal with. I don't want to let it go. I don't want to give Kobe a pass because the charges were dropped, but none of us know what happened in that room. And we have to be careful in just that it's a really unhealthy situation, no matter what happened in the room. And I can't shake it even all these years later. And then kind of watching him in that moment, as part of my brain says, wow, this is really cool. And another part of my brain says, oh boy, this is complicated.
Yeah, well, and he also gets the added political, saying he won't shut up and dribble was clearly a shot at Laura Ingraham, which I do
Yeah, it was. It was, and I mean, that's a shot at her. She kind of, you know, she deserves it.
Fuck her, yeah. I'm not defending her.
You
at
know,
all.
I mean, and I mean, she, what is, I mean, you know, she can tell Kobe whatever she wants. I mean, Kobe and LeBron, frankly, I mean, have plenty of accomplishments on and off the court to kind of tell her to just go fuck off. So, you know, I mean, I hate to even bring that aspect into it. I mean, you know, we did bring it up when she did it with LeBron, and I think maybe we gave her a little bit too much attention in doing so, because the reality is, you know, we know what LeBron is, and, you know, Kobe is a bit more of an enigma, and that's by design on his part. But, you know, Laura Ingraham, I mean, come on. The people who listen to us, I have to wonder if they would even know who she was if we hadn't brought her up.
Well, I mean, she's on Fox News. She's.
Yeah, but I mean, but if you're not watching Fox News, do you know who Laura Ingraham is? You know, I mean, you know,
yeah,
who she is.
I do, because I used to listen to her radio show.
You
years
know,
ago.
I mean, I do, but she is just because of kind of, you know, I don't know, maybe you're right. I don't know, but.
I mean, oddly, she becomes more prominent because of all the people that got kicked out of Fox News because of sexual inappropriate behaviors.
Exactly. I mean, O'Reilly and, you know, Roger Ailes and you know, all these.
The list goes on.
Boland and all those other guys. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. But, going back to the Oscars, aside from that moment, when Jordan Peele won for Best Screenplay with Get Out. I mean, that was a crazy moment. He gave a very, a good speech that I think that everybody, no matter where your political leanings were, could kind of rally around and say, wow, I'm really happy for you. He was the first, Black American to be awarded Best Screenplay for the movie Get Out. It was also up for Best Picture, and it didn't win in the movie. And we'll talk about the movies that didn't win in a second, but it didn't win. But I mean, this was a historical win for him. I thought his speech, his acceptance speech, was great, and it was just a really good overall moment that kind of quieted some of the noise. I think some conservatives want to kind of grumble about race because they, you know, they acknowledge that it's the first Black person to win that award or win the award in that category. And, you know, if you're going to grumble about that, then obviously you've got issues. But I just thought that was a really cool moment. And we've both seen the movie. It's a good movie. From beginning to end, it's weird. It's scary. And the fact that it just like, oh my God, like you could actually see it happening. But it's all in all enjoyable.
So I actually ended up turning on Get Out, 3 days ago. Just, it was on and I picked up a few things that I hadn't caught the details of. It absolutely, if it was going to win in any category, Best Screenplay was the right one, because there are so many twists might not be the right word, but like there was so much cleverness to the story, the way it was put together. Everything from, you know, he gets, you know, talking about the history of slavery and racism in America and how tobacco gets him enslaved. He saves himself by pulling cotton out of the chair. And what I didn't catch until just the other day, I watched it again. And early in the movie, the father of his girlfriend, I guess we're spoiler alert time, but it's Oscars. If you haven't watched it by now, your problem. But early in the movie, the father talks about how, you know, they hit a deer driving into their rich suburban area, and he gives a series of comments about deer that are basically analogous to racist talk about immigrants or, you know, people in overpopulated poor people, basically. and the fact that the main character kills that guy using a deer taken off the wall, and the fact that that didn't click in my head until 3 days ago embarrassed me, but it also really impressed me with how well written that script was. So
it flowed together. There was, I mean, it was, I think for some people, I think there's the good thing about it is that if you just watched it on its face, I think it was a movie that you could enjoy, even if you didn't pick up on all the subtleties.
I agree.
And the first watching, it's
creepy as fuck, right? I mean, they weaved an awkward, first time I watched it, that overtook my ability to appreciate the subtle cleverness.
Yeah, and then at the same time, if you did get the cleverness and the subtlety and everything else, then that just makes the movie that much better. So, that was a great moment at the Oscars. There was some Jimmy Kimmel, the host, he's a guy who he can be divisive in that, you know, if you're a liberal, Democrat, progressive, what have you, then, you know, you're going to want to hear everything that Jimmy Kimmel has to say. You know, he's big on
healthcare,
free healthcare, and he's you know, a big, you know, anti-gun proponent, and you know, he's got a kid with special needs, that he's talked about in the past, and you know, he's got plenty of money, but what about the other people that don't? And he tugs at the heartstrings, and you know, that if you know, for people with empathy, that you know, he's someone that they will gravitate to. But there's a flip side to the coin, and there's a group of people who don't agree with him, who don't agree with the way he preaches at people, and he turns people off. And the ratings were very down this year for the Oscars.
Yes.
The lowest that they had been in I think the last 30 years or the last 20 years or something along those lines. And you know, part of it is because of him, part of it is because of the polarized
society.
Yes. And just, you know, obviously the talk about sexual harassment, the Second Amendment stuff, I think that's where the Laura Ingraham thing is interesting, because I think there's a lot of people who may not necessarily agree with, you know, Laura Ingraham and that statement she made to LeBron James. But with something like the Oscars, you know, based on the number of people who didn't watch compared to the people who have watched in the past, and compared to the fact, and you take into account that, you know, you have a lot of people, you know, who were pretty closely connected to Harvey Weinstein who are claiming that they didn't know his whole situation. You know, there's people who are seeing some hypocrisy and, you know, a lot of people covering their own ass and, you know, all that sort of stuff. And, you know, there's the politics in it. I think they heard it. And the question is, you know, do they do anything about it?
I watched The Five on Fox today, and they were so giddy about the low ratings of the Oscars that it was actually funny to watch how giddy they were at the Oscars not getting ratings. Because one of the things about the Second Amendment folks and the NRA and just the whole right wing media is vilify Hollywood. Hollywood is the elites. Hollywood and they're not completely wrong. Right, I mean, you hear about the swag bags that are given out at the Oscars, and it's ridiculous. Like everyone who shows up gets a $75,000. I mean, that number could be off by 50 grand in either direction or more. But you know, they Hollywood elites do live a lifestyle that people like us can only fantasize about, and then when they get out on their high horse about some liberal cause, it is easy to say, really easy for you to say, Meryl Streep, Jimmy Kimmel, fill in the name. And watching the Fox folks just, you know, drooling over the demise of their ratings was funny to me from a, and you know, an observational perspective, but also a lot of what they're saying is factually correct.
Well, yeah, I mean, and that's the beauty of it. I mean, it's true. You can't deny that the ratings are down. You can't deny that people didn't want to watch because they didn't want to hear. They didn't want to get preached at for,
right,
you know, 4 hours. But part of it is that, you know, the Oscars always run long, and people are just like, listen, I'm not staying up until, you know, 12:15 to figure out what the best picture is.
Right.
You know, and another problem that the Oscars has is that, frankly, you know, they nominated 10 movies for Best Picture, and, you know, none of the movies made any money because nobody went to go see them, right? This movie that won, The Shape of Water, you know, I don't think it even made $50 million, which means that less than 6 million people went to go see this movie. You know,
how many of the nominees did you see? I saw Get Out. That's all I saw.
I'm trying to think what was nominated.
Three Billboards Outside of Wherever, Missouri, which I will see. I'll watch all these movies when they become, you know, show up on my TV. But
yeah, I mean, I think I only saw, like, I think I only saw three of the movies.
Right, well, you're two ahead of me.
Yeah, I mean, so, but I mean,
and you're married, so you have date nights.
Yeah. No, that's,
or not. No. Sorry.
No, I think it's just, it's the,
if you just did a voodoo curse to make me choke on wine after saying that you succeeded.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the big problem that they have is these movies are not, like, they're very critically acclaimed, but there's no connection to the people that are paying and watching the movies. And so they have to figure out, like, you know, the Academy put in, the reason why, you know, why there's 10 movies that are nominated now instead of the previous where it was just five?
Five, yeah.
You know why they do that?
I don't. If there's an actual, there's actual scientific.
You know, they do it because of The Dark Knight. The Dark Knight, the Batman movie, The Dark Knight, was highly critically acclaimed. It made crazy money. Everybody went to go see it. There were tons and tons of people who said, like, this is, you know, this was the best movie of the year. But the Academy held it out for, you know, unknown,
because it's a super, right? it's a comic book movie, and they don't want to put that,
right, exactly. And they didn't, you know, it wasn't, I mean, they didn't see it, they didn't view it as, you know,
artistic,
the type of film that should,
right,
be nominated for, you know, Best Picture. And so after that, there was such pushback, you know, from just everyone, that they said, okay, fine, we'll expand the field, we'll expand the pool of movies that you have to choose from. But, you know, the caveat is that in order to get in that pool, you need a certain percentage of people to say that this was the number one movie of the year. And so what you have is, you still have that kind of elitism, that it's almost like they go to and they look at the box office and they say, okay, these movies barely made any money. Let's start with these and work our way up. You know, and then it's just like and then once they get to a certain point, they're like, all right, we've got eight movies that made no money. But, you know, the last two will be the, you know, kind of the last two in our pool will be the first two that made some money. So it doesn't look like we're just being complete elitist assholes over here, and we've satisfied the criteria, and look, we win. And that's something that the Academy has really got to work on. They've got to get movies in there that people have seen, that people care about. I mean, otherwise, viewership is just going to continue to go down. You know, I mean, because they released the list of the movies that are up for nomination, you know, what, 2 weeks ahead of the actual event? So,
no, it's more than that. It's a while more than that.
Yeah, I mean, but either way, yeah, it's a lot. I mean, I think they do push it out. But, I mean, I know the formal, or, yeah, right, whatever. Either way, it doesn't matter. It comes out ahead of time. So basically, you're telling people ahead of time, like, hey, this whole thing is going to be a celebration of nothing that you watched. So you can either watch it from now, between now and then. But since you didn't have any interest in it when it initially came out, you're probably not going to. So you still need to watch just because we're the Oscars. And, you know, you need to watch us praise ourselves for, you know, 3 hours of your night. And I think it rubs a lot of people the wrong way.
I think you're right. Although I do wonder if it's kind of like the Masters golf tournament, in the sense that even if the majority of America doesn't like fawn over them anymore, there's so damn much money that the people involved really don't care. I mean, the Masters, the Augusta National Golf Course got told like 10 years ago, if you don't have, you know, women members, all your sponsors will pull out. And the Masters' response was, okay, pull out. We have so much money, we don't care. And there has not been a commercial for that golf tournament for like a decade, maybe more. And I wonder if the Oscars is almost the same way. They're just, they're so self-congratulatory. They're all so fucking wealthy. They show up and they get handed a six-figure swag bag. And they're like, okay, so middle America, yeah, stopped watching. Do we
I mean,
care?
The Masters is different though, because like they're the mass, it's not like the mass, it'd be different if the Masters only invited golfers you never heard of, right? Like, I mean, generally they're like, you know, Phil Mickelson is there.
I mean, that's the top whatever 50 guys in the sport, no doubt.
Yeah, I mean,
but I'm just saying, know, that, I mean, from a commercial standpoint, and I'm throwing that out there, there may be some similarity.
Yeah, I don't think they're, I don't think, I mean, it's sports, and again, the Masters isn't an award ceremony, it's an actual,
it's a competition,
sporting,
sure.
It's a sporting event where it's determined on, like, it's determined on the golf course.
True.
So people have a vested interest in watching, not to mention people bet very heavily on the Masters.
All right, that is right? True. That is true. But the only the only counterpoint I'm going to make to that is, it is 4 days worth of a ton of television coverage that used to have however many millions of dollars commercials coming in, and now they get none, and they give zero fucks because they're so wealthy already that they just don't care. And I think the Oscars might have the same mentality. Like, they know Hollywood doesn't live or die based on the money brought in during the Oscars any more than Augusta National lives or dies based on the money coming in during the commercials for that tournament.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, so yes, that is where they are similar. But I mean, I would say so if we're talking about getting the ratings back, in order to get the ratings back, they need to bring in movies for Best Picture that people have seen. Now, if they don't care, then obviously it doesn't matter, right? Like,
they're just, and that's all doing, I'm going at, yeah.
The way they're doing it, and continue to isolate themselves as these, you know, supreme leftists, you know, morally superior elitists, and that's fine, but you're going to alienate a lot of people. Right.
I mean, yeah. No. We're completely in agreement there. They don't know if they care.
And this is where, I mean, and this is the problem that the progressive, democratic, left, liberal, whatever, that they have, is that, you know, they talk about being so inclusive, but a lot of times it feels like they're actually being very exclusive. You know, I mean,
completely agree.
It's just, you know, we've kind of talked about this with Mike Wood. We've talked, you know, you and I have talked about this at length. You know, it's, you know, they're the party for everybody, except for if you don't agree exactly with what they're saying, then they're just like, all right, screw you, go away. We'll just close ranks, and, you know, it'll be just us. We're the only ones who are allowed in the clubhouse that is the, you know, political left group.
Yep. All right. So, yeah, I think we are kind of on the same page there. All right, man. So there's two things I really want to talk about. I want to talk about the NFL Combine, because it's going on right now. And Lamar Jackson, a player you and I have talked about for 2 years now, allegedly was asked to try out as a wide receiver. And I don't know if you saw, I put an article up on the Whiskey Congress sports page about that. Lamar Jackson, if you don't know who he was the quarterback for Louisville for the last 2 years, who put up just crazy numbers running and throwing. He's never played any position, it's as far as I know, through high school, but certainly not through college, other than quarterback. And Bill Polian, the former Bills, Colts, and Panthers general manager, said he should switch to wide receiver, which I know hits a nerve with a lot of people. I'm assuming you're among them. I won't put that in your mouth, but I will assume, because he's an athletic black quarterback and he played phenomenally well at that position, and to say he should change positions in the NFL, to me, ticks a nerve back into the 90s when black quarterbacks were heavily discriminated against. Now, I do have things to say about that, but I want to kind of lob that into your side of the court and hear what you have to say.
So you're pretty far off on this.
Okay.
I mean, it's not the racist slap in the face everybody's saying it is. You know, he was asked, you know, it came up, but it's not because, well, you know, the scouts are saying, well, he's black and he can run, so he needs to be a receiver. It's actually just when you do the analysis of the player, when you look at his height, when you look at his build, what does he look like? He looks like a receiver, right? He looks closer to Martavius Bryant than he does Ben Roethlisberger. You know, he looks more like, you know, Antonio Brown, and I just am going with Steelers, obviously, because that's what I'm a fan of, than he does Joe Flacco. He doesn't look like Russell Westbrook. He doesn't look like Cam Newton. Like,
you meant Russell Wilson, I think is who you meant.
What's that?
I think you meant Russell Wilson.
What are they? Oh, Russell
Westbrook.
Wilson, sorry. No, I mean, yeah, he doesn't look like Russell Wilson. He doesn't look like Cam Newton. Nobody asked
Michael Vick, which is who he gives the most comparison to.
What's that?
Or he doesn't look like Michael Vick in terms of stoutness or whatever, which is the guy he's most close to compared to. Steve, we're on the same page here again.
Let me finish. He doesn't look like those guys. He doesn't play like those guys. Right? I mean, the fact of the matter is, based on his size, based on the way that he's built, his frame is more suited for receiver. Right now, he's played relatively well at quarterback. His completion percentage has gone up over the last three seasons. And his completion percentage his senior year was around the same as Josh Allen, who played at Wyoming, no one is asking him to change positions. But he's also not built like Josh Allen.
Josh Allen isn't athletic enough to play receiver.
What's that?
Josh Allen is not athletic enough to play receiver. He's not going to separate from guys.
Right. So, I mean, like, that's a big part of it. I mean, like, you can say it's because of race or whatever, but I mean, we're talking about like the guy, like when you just look at it and you just, if you could put him in unit, if you could put him in pads, helmets with a visor, with long sleeves and gloves, and you couldn't tell race. And then you ask that guy to play a game, you would probably say, well, let's look at this guy at receiver, because the fear, I mean, even the fear with Michael Vick, even the fear with Cam Newton, is with these guys running around, they're going to take hits. They're not going to last nearly as long. Cam Newton is kind of a different animal because he's so big, strong, and thick.
6'4", 260.
Russell Wilson is also, he's not as tall as Cam Newton.
But he's a thick guy.
But he
guy,
is
yeah.
very dense and thickly built. And so, you know, there's just a concern about the kid's durability in the NFL with his kind of skinny frame. I didn't see it as, you know, the moral outrage that some people, you know, were kind of claiming and stirring up. You know, but I mean, I think that it was brought up, but at the same time, they're not forcing him into it either. You know, they see the potential of him as a quarterback, and, you know, it's not something that's being forced on him.
You know,
I mean, listen, this is a league that had Robert Griffin III. This is the league that had Michael Vick. This is the league that's had, you know, plenty of black running or plenty of black, you know, Colin Kaepernick, you know, plenty of black quarterbacks who could run, who were given the opportunity to play quarterback. Now Robert Griffin III ultimately got hurt. And that was kind of the end of his career. Colin Kaepernick, we have talked about him ad nauseum. You know, Cam and Russell Wilson have both been able to avoid that devastating injury that has kept them out for an extended period of time. But let's kind of be honest about this. You know, Tim Tebow was asked to switch positions. Eric Crouch out of Nebraska was asked to switch the positions. There was a quarterback. He was actually out of Arkansas. He ended up, Matt Jones. Was a white guy. And he ended up playing a receiver for Bengals. I can't think of the guy's name.
Matt Jones.
Oh, yeah, Matt Jones. Sorry, you were breaking up there.
Okay.
You know, and he ended up out of the league because of, like, drugs and alcohol problems and things like that. But, I mean, you know, sometimes guys get asked to switch. It's not, in this day and age, it's not about race. We see guys like Deshaun Watson, who was having a really spectacular year before he got hurt. You know, the Browns have, you know, Deshaun Kizer. You see guys like Tyrod Taylor. This whole premise of, you know, black quarterbacks not being able to play quarterback in the NFL, I think that rumor has been dispelled. But Lamar Jackson is such a freak athlete that, you know, they're going to want to see, like, the NFL is all about what can you do for me? How can you maximize your ability for me? And so for a coach or, you know, someone to say, I want to see him at receiver, it's not the end of the world, and I don't think it's true.
Okay. I think you either I misspoke or you misunderstood what I was saying, because I 100% agree with you. In my article I wrote, I basically said this is going to trigger a lot of people back to the 1990s when there was that stereotype. I was thinking back to Major Harris at WVU, who was in college at the same time as me. And if you don't know who Major Harris was, he was a phenomenally athletic quarterback with a crazy arm and a super strong runner. And he did get discriminated against because of race in 1990. That has gone away. That has been dispelled to a large degree. I completely agree with everything you just said. Especially when you throw in the Tim Tebow factor, because it was kind of the same thing. Like, here's a phenomenally successful college quarterback, and will his skills translate to the pros? On the other hand, I will say that if I'm Lamar Jackson, who is a projected first or possibly second round pick as a quarterback, there's nothing he's going to do to prove he can be a receiver that is going to improve his draft status. So if I'm him, and he says that no one has actually approached him. Bill Polian said that, you know, he should consider switching, and maybe NFL teams will think about it. But he will get drafted in the first two rounds as a quarterback based on his resume. And if he has to go the role of a Terrell Pryor, and, okay, you take your shot at quarterback, it doesn't work, you are so gifted that you might be able to make the switch, that's down the road. But at the combine, which is your audition for pick me in the draft and, you know, give me my shot, he has nothing to gain by trying out as a receiver.
Yeah, it was something suggested by, you know, some
Bill Polian said it.
I consider 80 years to be old. Somewhat out of touch. He's a guy with a lot of experience, with a lot of success. But, I mean, there's a reason why Bill Polian is out of a league, right? I mean, for a couple of reasons.
True.
One, you know, he's in his 70s. He's essentially retired. He's got a, you know, a nice cushy analyst job at ESPN. And he, you know, towards the end, he didn't have a lot of success. I think he was with the Colts when they won that Super Bowl with Peyton Manning. You know, but after that, there wasn't much. And you know, the guys had a lot of success, but I mean, we see times change. We see the league pass guys by. I think Bill Polian is one of those guys. I think he does provide a great deal of insight, but in situations like that, he thinks with that old school thought of, you know, I think there is some old school in him, but I think he's just looking at the, you know, all right, well, I mean, you're fast and, you know, you're skinny. So you look more like a receiver. So let's try you at receiver. That's where right. That's what I would do. And, you know, you would say, well, God, I hope I don't get drafted by you because otherwise we're going to have a problem, you know?
Okay. I mean, I'm not disappointed that we agree. I expected us to butt heads a bit there and we didn't. One more thing about the NFL draft that is just an amazing story is Shaquin Harris, the linebacker from UCF, is just blowing people away. And if you don't know his story, he is a linebacker from the University of Central Florida, and he had a hand amputated when he was like 5 years old or 4 years old. So this kid is making a name for himself, and I just want to wish him well. I mean, what an amazing story to have that, you know, challenge and overcome it and compete at that level is just an amazing story. And I just want people to keep an eye on it. We're certainly not the first people to talk about it.
When he was 4 years old, his mom walked into the kitchen and he was trying to cut his fingers off with a knife because his hand was in such excruciating pain. Now, I didn't see exactly what the issue was that was causing the pain, but whatever it was, I guess it was resolved by amputation. So, you know, it happened when he was between 4 and 5 years old. So the kid has, you know, played his entire career with one arm, you know,
one hand and one arm. He's got an arm up to the wrist, one and a half arm.
So, you know, and football is a tough sport to play with one arm. But he, you know, became a really solid linebacker at the University of Central Florida. He's got amazing speed. He busted like 20 some odd reps with 225. You know, which, you know, your 40 time, your, you know, the number of reps you do, all that is a part of the silly season in the NFL, you know, where, you know, we're talking about guys in shorts running indoors on turf against air, no defense, no nothing. And so it's, you know, none of this stuff really truly matters, right? I mean, it all looks good. It all helps to, you know, maybe give
Then how do you explain Mike Mamula being in the Hall of Fame, Steve?
Well, yeah, but I mean, you know, it gives these coaches, you know, a sense of, you know, all right, now I can go ahead and say this guy is the best player. Now, guys do come out of nowhere and they become combine warriors.
Mike Mamula.
There was a guy out of Ohio State a few years ago. He was a DN. I can't think of his name either.
He went to the Jets. I'm forgetting his name.
Yeah,
as well.
He went to the Jets. And, I mean, he was another guy who had a crazy workout, 40-time bench. He looked like Adonis, and he played like Madonna. Like, I mean, it happens. But for the most part, like the draft, I mean, the combine really doesn't tell you anything about a guy. You know, I mean,
agreed.
When you're talking about how do you figure out if a guy can play football, you watch him play fucking football. You know, you look at him play against good talent, and then you figure it out. Now, sometimes these guys, they play at smaller schools. They don't always play against the best talent. So you got to kind of take a risk on a guy. So maybe you don't take a guy who played at a Division I AA school or, you know, FCS school, maybe you don't take him number one. But you have examples all the time. I mean, Carson Wentz, Joe Flacco, you know, these guys played at smaller schools and have developed into, you know, very effective pros. So some of it is scouting and analysis and looking at the tape of them actually playing. And then some of it is just luck. You know, some of these guys are – you know, once they get in the league, they have another burst of maturity. They figure things out. Their bodies mature a little bit more, and they become really good players. You know, some guys who think they have it all figured out realize that there's a lot more to life when you take away the, you know, the constraints of the NCAA, and everything fucking falls apart. And for this guy, he's played his whole career with this with this one hand. So
yeah.
The biggest thing for him is to be able to continue to do what he's done his entire career, and that's adapt to a new level, knowing that he's, you know, behind the eight ball. You know, you wish him the best of luck. I think that he can have some success in the league, even if it's just a special teams player. But, I mean, you know, we saw guys like Jim Abbott had one hand and he played fucking baseball.
It was a pitcher.
Yeah, I mean, so
if he would catch the ball and then it was amazing.
Right. I mean, so I mean, I think that you know, it is a great story. I think that, you know, I you know, he wouldn't want anybody to feel sorry for him. He's got people rooting for him, and you know, you wish him the best. It'll be interesting to see what happens.
Completely agree. Do you want to talk about the teacher who got suspended?
Yeah, you know what? Maybe let's talk about getting together for another show. You know, it's almost 11 o'clock. I got to be up and early and go to the gym.
Me too.
The program, so I'm not a weak bastard anymore.
Yeah, you don't. You only bench 450, you pussy.
See, I don't want those numbers out there. I don't mean that shit being spread amongst the masses, but. No, let's shut it down. Let's try to get together later in the week, get another episode out. But we appreciate everyone for listening. Check us out at Whiskey Congress on Instagram, Twitter. You can check us out on Facebook. You can check out our website, whiskeycongress.com. Obviously, the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you're getting the podcast from, Podbean. And if you got a question or you got a dispute, you want to comment or something along those lines, then you can reach out to us on any of the platforms. We try to respond as quickly as possible. And Jim, anything else?
Email us, Jim or Steve at whiskeycongress.com. So email Jim at Whiskey Congress, Steve at Whiskey Congress. We will do whiskey reviews again soon. And good talking to you, brother.
All right, man.
Out. See ya.